Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Nerdy. It is Monday, February 22nd, and I'm your host, Kara Santa Maria. This week, we have a great show. I'll be chatting with USC graduate student in physics, Chris Cantwell. He also happens to be the inventor, the developer of an epic quantum simulation and a pretty fun game called Quantum Chess. But before we dive into that, I have a few people I want to thank. Remember, guys, Talk Nerdy is free to download week after week. And if you want to support the show, you can do it in many ways. First of which is by visiting KaraSantaMaria.com. You can click through to links for Patreon, to links for PayPal. You can shop in the Talk Nerdy store. You can even go to iTunes, rate and review, tweet, Facebook. Oh my God, tell your friends. A lot of great ways to support the show. This week, I want to give a really big shout out to Sean Krause and Phil T-Bear. Thank you two so much for your really generous support. I also want to thank the honorable husband, Malcolm Wadi II, Gabriel Felipe Jaramillo Gonzalez, Ken Pfeiffer, Brian Holden, and last but, oh my gosh, definitely not least, Jeffrey Sewell. Thank you guys so much from the bottom of my heart. All right, guys, without any further ado, here is the guest of honor this week, Chris Cantwell. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I think this is going to be fun. So you were recommended to chat with by Crystal Dilworth, who has previously been on the show for people who listened to her episode. She's also one of my best friends, so that's helpful. And I think we're going to talk today about quantum chess.
Okay.
Which makes me so excited. So recently, Crystal helped organize an event at Caltech through the Institute for Quantum Information and Matter. I always want to call it the Institute for Quantum Information and Math,
yeah.
But it's Matter. Yeah. It was like a celebration of Richard Feynman. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was featured in this event was this hilarious video where Paul Rudd plays Stephen Hawking at quantum chess. And I will link that out in the show notes so anybody can click through and watch this video. But it was your game, Quantum Chess, that was featured in this video.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay, so
it was pretty crazy.
Let's see if we can't talk about a breakdown first of, I guess we don't really have to break down chess, but hopefully people know what chess is. But what it is about quantum mechanics that you can put into chess, and like what quantum chess really even means.
Okay. So I'm kind of glad you framed it that way, because that's a common misconception about the game that I'm trying to fix. I didn't insert quantum mechanics into chess.
Interesting. Okay.
It's more a quantum simulation that I built the rules of chess on top of to give people a way to interact with quantum stuff.
Oh, cool. So it's almost like chess is the sweetener, it's the appetizer.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
To help you understand it. So how can you take these two things, one that is sort of formulaic of the way the universe works, and the other which is like a fun but very complicated game, and make them play nicely?
It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I first started the project, it kind of spawned out of a final project I did for a class where I wanted to create a game that gave people a way to interact with quantum phenomena. And I did a little bit of research first to see what was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I found felt like it was missing something. It felt like they were injecting quantum phenomena into the game, but they'd only put in like superposition or maybe something to represent what entanglement might be like. But it didn't really feel like you were interacting with quantum stuff.
Interesting. So there are games that exist, but maybe only a couple of quantum features in
yes.
them.
Yes. There is a quantum chess that is out there. The pieces exist in a superposition of being all pieces until you grab it to move it, and then it collapses and decides, okay, I'm a knight, and then you can move it like a knight. it's interesting. It's kind of representative of what superposition and measurement are like.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really feel like you're interacting with quantum stuff. It just feels random.
That sounds like it would be random. Yeah. And it sounds like it would be kind of like gambling.
Yes.
You know, like a game of chance, not a game of skill at that point.
So when I started, I set some design goals for myself. And the first thing I said is, I want this to be quantum at its core.
Mm.
So I figured for a board game, the very most fundamental thing is movement.
Mm-hmm.
So I made movement quantum. It's a quantum unitary evolution.
So when we talk about what that means, because obviously we won't be able, in the time that I can steal you away for, to describe the laws of quantum mechanics and make sure that everybody listening to the show has a full and total grasp. But there are these fundamentals that you made sure that you built the game onto.
Yes.
So that first fundamental that you're talking about, movement, what is the quantum property, I guess we could say, of movement? What is it about the movement that is so quantum?
So it is the way quantum systems evolve is by unitaries. It's just a mathematical term that defines a law for how a quantum system must evolve to be quantum. And so my board exists in a superposition and it evolves through unitaries. So movement is a unitary. And it's not actually like moving a piece. It's performing a unitary that acts on the board, that acts on all of the spaces involved.
And so that mathematical principle, which most people listening probably don't fully understand, if they understand at all, how is that represented in the way you play chess?
So I made unitaries that simulated the rules of chess or as close as I could get to them. So I had to design these unitaries specifically to represent chess play.
Because, for example, a bishop can only do what a bishop can do. Right. You can't make a bishop do what a pawn can
do.
Gotcha.
And so I have rules of the game that if a space is occupied by a bishop, you tap on the space, and then the game decides what unitaries are available to you that would represent moving that bishop across the board.
Okay, so kind of like if I were playing just regular old chess, I would know that there's only a certain menu of things I can do with any individual chess piece.
Yes.
You offer that menu to me as a player. So how is it then different? Like, what is the unitary aspect of it?
So what you can do is either your standard move or a quantum move, which is a different unitary.
Interesting.
And that creates superposition.
And so when it creates superposition, is it then the idea that another piece is entangled with this piece?
So it's actually the same piece existing in two different locations after this quantum move unitary is performed.
And do you know which those locations?
You don't know because it's both.
Yeah.
It's existing where it was moving from and also existing where it was moving to with some probability. I mean, it's a complex amplitude, but it's displayed on the board as a probability.
And so for somebody who maybe has heard of Schrodinger's cat,
yes,
is this a good example of what you're talking about? It's either alive or dead, but
yes,
you don't know because you haven't opened the box.
That's a perfect example. There's actually, I call it Schrodinger's king or
nice.
Any piece can actually, in the game, exist in an alive, dead state because you could maybe move it over to space, say, D5, and then the other player could try and capture on D5. So if you're there, you're dead, but you could still be back on A2 or something.
Oh, geez. So you don't know and they don't know until the action that actually equals observation. So just like opening the box, moving their piece to try to capture yours.
So even a capture movement might not cause an observation. So your piece can exist in an alive dead state for some amount of time. The rule for measurement is that no space can be occupied by more than one type of piece.
Hmm.
And so if there's ever any situation in the game where a space has some probability of being a bishop and some probability of being the opponent's knight, then it'll measure and figure out what's going on.
And will you know that?
Yes, because things will collapse and superpositions will collapse, and maybe your bishop that was both alive and dead is now alive, or it's dead.
Wow, so that's a whole other layer of strategy of trying to force these superpositions to collapse into something that is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I'm still learning how to play it too, because like I said, I didn't insert quantum mechanics into a game of chess. I just tried to put chess onto quantum mechanics, so I don't even know everything that you can do. I mean, it's so pretty cool.
And have you thought about, or have you programmed, or is anybody working on programming a computer version like that you can play against, like a Watson?
So I have thought about it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. That is not a trivial task at all. I mean, chess AI by itself is very complex.
Mm-hmm.
How to make a quantum chess AI is something that is going to take quite a bit of time. I do have some ideas on how to do that. And what I'm hoping to do is, with the initial release of the game, have at least a basic AI that maybe plays it as if it were standard chess. It has no idea about the quantum moves, maybe. Just to give you something to play against so you can learn the mechanics and then graduate to playing online against other players.
So right now, quantum chess exists in a Kickstarter form, but it also obviously does exist. You've played it. You've used it for, I guess, teaching purposes and allowed other people to play it. I know our mutual friend Spiros talks about it all the time. Yeah. I'm sure he's played it many times. So it does exist in that form. You have a Kickstarter right now.
Yes.
Where you are making it available for people to help support the development and the release. So when it is available, like when people go to the Kickstarter and they say, I want to pledge, I want to help make quantum chess a reality, and I want to be able to play it, what do they get?
So at the very lowest, well, at the $5 level, you're just saying, I like this project, I'm supporting you.
Sure.
At $10, you get the game when it's released.
Oh, cool. And it's like a digital download?
Yeah, it'll be a digital download. Initial release will be PC, Mac, and Linux through like Steam or Humble Bundle or something.
Very cool. And then you can support at higher levels.
Yeah, there's higher level pledges with higher level rewards.
But simply, if you want to be able to play the game, only $10.
Yeah,
that's
$10.
Oh, that's great. And so after that, you'll have the kind of the financial support that you need to be able to troubleshoot and debug and do all of the wonderful and upgrade and do all the wonderful things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you've been doing this as like a passion project.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a one man team on it pretty much for a year, almost 2 years now. I've been meeting with Spiros talking about the concepts and the changes mm-hmm. I've made, but I've done all the programming on my own. I did all the art on my own. I found some free music off the Unity Asset Store and plugged it in. I actually recorded my own sound effects using Audacity and a microphone. So
that's so cool.
It's been pretty fun working on, but I realized that if I really want to give it a chance to affect the world and, I mean, have a lot of people playing it and having fun playing it, and as a side effect, coming to understand quantum mechanics a little bit better, then it needs that professional touch.
Sure. And I mean, that's really, I think, what a lot of makers and a lot of inventors and creative people utilize crowdfunding for. They have a brilliant idea. They can take it as far as they can take it with the like workload that they're dealing with. Because let's be honest here, you're not like some computer programmer who like is doing this at your job when you're bored. Like, you're a graduate student.
Yes.
Like, you're busy.
Yeah, I'm working on a PhD in physics, and this has taken a lot of my time.
Yeah, so let's actually talk about that. Let's talk a little bit about the history, and we'll get back to the game soon, but I think it's so interesting to learn about people's origin stories, especially it makes a product like this or an experience like this so much more, I don't know, meaningful. So you are a graduate student at USC.
Yes.
And what year are you in your PhD program?
So I've taken some chunks of time out in between mm-hmm. for physical therapy and stuff. But I think if you kind of condense it all into a solid chunk, I'm about 7 years into my graduate degree.
So are you like all but dissertation at this point, or do you have any more coursework to do?
I'm done with my coursework now. I'm also doing a joint computer science master's.
Yeah, because why not? That sounds easy.
It's kind of cool. I mean, at USC, they have this program where basically if you take all of your electives in the PhD for physics, mm-hmm. if you take all the electives in the computer science department, then you only need two or three extra courses and you get a master's in computer science too. And I like programming, so I figured why not?
Yeah, because you have a dual undergrad, don't you?
Yes, electrical engineering and physics.
I know that at my university, a lot of the biology kids, I was psych, but then I got into bio later. A lot of the bio kids had a forced chemistry minor. And so those who wanted to just go biochem or do a dual major, it was like they were already so invested at that point. It's like, oh, it's only, you know, seven more classes or it's kind of worth it. I mean, so you have, okay, you have a physics undergrad.
Yes.
You have an electrical engineering undergrad.
Yes.
You already have a master's, right? Or you're working on your computer science master's.
I will be done with it this semester.
Oh, okay.
I just needed three more units, so I'm taking 3 units of CS research this semester.
So you've got your computer science master's almost under your belt, and you're very close to your PhD in physics. What's your research area? What are you focusing on?
Quantum computing.
Quantum computing, nice. Yes. And so that's really where the connection comes in with IQIM and Spiros and all these wonderful quantum physicists.
Yes.
Very cool. And Preskill and all of that. So I've yet to have John Preskill on the podcast, but I'm going to, I swear.
Someday.
Yeah, someday. I keep
bugging
him.
He's a nice guy. I like him.
Such a nice guy. And so this is great because I have this awesome group of friends at Caltech who obviously you know most of them, but it's so rare that I get to like pick the brains of people who are at these other amazing institutions here in Southern California that are doing amazing things because I just don't know as many people there.
Yeah.
So, okay, you're working on your PhD in physics, but you've been at USC since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? It's funny, I'm doing this totally backward. I'm starting with the present
and
moving to the past. You know, obviously you sent me some information and I read up a little bit on you before we started chatting. What is it that made you want to come to USC? What brought you to that university?
I got a scholarship. So in 1998, I broke my neck. I was paralyzed. And a student at USC at the time, friend now, his name is Nick Enriquez, he showed up in the hospital room when I was laying in the bed and he said, hey, there's a scholarship waiting for you if you can get accepted to USC. He said, I know you have a lot of other stuff on your mind right now, but remember that.
And so in 98, what year were you in high school?
It was the end of my junior year.
End of junior year. And this was not a drunk driving incident. This was not random thing. It was diving.
Yes.
You're an athlete.
I was an athlete. I was a varsity swimmer and on the water polo team. And I was actually diving in a race at a Boy Scout camp and dove into a lake and hit a sandbar and broke my neck. And yeah.
So it wasn't a swimming pool. It was a lake. It was hard to see and just probably with such good form and speed and all of the right things is kind of a recipe there. So, gosh, you're so young. Do you remember it?
Oh, yeah.
You do. Yeah. Were you conscious through it?
For most of it, I think. They put me on a lot of drugs after they got me to the hospital. So I don't remember a lot of the first couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I do remember diving into the water and that whole incident pretty much up to getting into the ambulance.
Mm. So at that point, you didn't really know what was wrong. You just knew something might be wrong. Yeah. And then you remember being in the hospital.
Yeah, I remember being in the hospital. Like I said, the first couple of weeks are kind of spotty.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. One of my teachers at the time brought a book for my parents to read to me while I was in the hospital. And my mom would have to start over every single day because the medication I was on would make me forget. So every day we'd start at page one and she'd read through to however far we got in the book. And the next day she'd start at page one again.
And how long during that initial period of recovery were you in the hospital before you, I'm not sure if you went to a convalescent home or you went into rehab, but how long were you actually critically in the hospital?
So I was in the ICU at Pomona Valley Hospital for 2.5 weeks, I believe. And then I went to Texas to the Institute for Rehabilitation and Research, a hospital there that specializes in spinal cord injury.
Where was that in Texas?
Houston.
Oh, nice. I'm a Texan. Oh. That's why I ask. Was it at Baylor? Is it a part of Baylor, maybe? I don't know. There's a lot of good hospitals in Houston. Houston's kind of a great medical center.
I think it was part of the whole...
That big complex there. Yeah. Houston's a good kind of epicenter for medicine in Texas. Yeah. So you were there for how long?
So I was there for the summer of 98. Two and a half months, I think.
When in the school year did this happen?
It happened May 30th. So right at the end of my junior year. And then I spent the summer in Texas and came back. Was it the day before or the day of my birthday? Something like that. August 25th.
So. Oh my God. So it was like, this is going to sound very morbid, but a convenient time for a horrible tragedy like that to happen. You didn't end up missing any school?
I didn't miss any school. They wanted to keep me in the hospital another month or two, but I didn't want to miss my senior year with my friends. So,
of course.
And I was doing well enough that they said, okay, you can go home. So I did outpatient throughout my senior year at Casa Colina.
Oh, okay. And so you actually broke your neck and had a spinal cord injury. Along, for anybody listening who maybe knows
C4.
C4. Yeah. Okay. And so that that induced paralysis at what point in your body?
Shoulders down.
Shoulders down. And so you do have some function of your hands, but the rest of you is...
So I'm what... It's an incomplete injury.
Oh, okay.
When I was first hurt, I couldn't move anything. Mm-hmm. I couldn't move my arms, hands, shoulders, nothing.
Just your head and face.
Yeah. But slowly it kind of started to come back.
Okay.
Now I'm to the point where I can walk in parallel bars. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to transition to a walker. I do have a lot of muscle spasticity, so that really limits my ability to walk. I mean, when I'm standing up, my legs are spasming and I'm bouncing and shaking all over the place.
Almost like a Parkinson's patient deals with.
Kinda.
They have these kind of spasms that make it very difficult to in certain stages. Mm-hmm. And so you said earlier, which probably didn't make sense at the time, that you took some time off throughout your undergrad, throughout your master's, or throughout your PhD to do physical therapy.
Yeah.
And how much time would you say, gosh, that's probably even hard to calculate, you've dedicated? How much of your life have you dedicated to that?
Geez, I don't know. So in my undergrad, between my junior and senior year of my electrical engineering degree, I took 2 years. When I came back, I had decided I liked all of my physics courses better, but I figured I only had 1 year left for electrical engineering, so I finished that out and then did another 2 years for physics.
Did you find that the electrical engineering, though, helps with your physics, like especially as a maker, as a tinkerer? I guess you're doing a lot of programming, but, oh, I know how to solder that. I know how to put that thing together. Like, does that help?
Not so much like making and putting stuff together, but just the way you think about and approach problems.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny. I've met people who were physiology or who did like physics and physiology, and they have this very almost engineering way of looking at the human body. You know, like flow charts and things like that. And it's really interesting because it really helps them grasp things. It's a totally outside of the box viewpoint, but but yeah, there's not always one way to look at the world.
Yeah.
And you can learn a lot that way. So not all for naught. You did a lot of great work in electrical engineering, and I'm trying to make you feel better, man. You use it. You use it sometimes.
Yes, I do.
And so you've obviously overcome just so much. You know, everything probably just took longer than it would have.
Oh, yeah. Everything takes longer.
Yeah. Just in general.
Yeah.
You were an athlete. Are you still an athlete?
I work out a lot. I have a hand cycle that I haven't gotten to ride as much this past year as I would like, but
because of quantum chess.
Yes, because of quantum chess.
And so what is that? What does a hand cycle involve?
It's a bike or trike, I guess, that you pedal with your hands.
Oh, cool.
So I sit down in it and it's got hand cranks that I pedal.
And are you like low to the ground in it? Can you ride it around town?
Yeah, it's low to the ground. I actually finished a mini triathlon with it 1 year ago.
Oh, geez.
Something like that.
What are the three things in a mini triathlon?
So it was a run, bike, swim.
Uh-huh.
I did the running and the biking.
That's
in
awesome.
The bike.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
It was like 12 miles or something like that.
I don't think I could pull that off. I can run about 3 miles and then I'm dead. Like that's about the extent of my cardiovascular health at this point. Well, that's really cool. And is that what you were saying on your website that you'd like to ride in the desert? Did I misread that?
So that's different.
That's different.
Yes.
What is that?
Since I was a kid, my family and I have gone out to Glamis Sand Dunes in Imperial County.
Oh, cool.
And we go off-roading.
Mm-hmm.
After I got hurt, we wanted to continue doing that. So my parents got a dune buggy that had a little more suspension so that I could handle the rides. And then I started driving my van and we started wondering, well, I wonder if I could drive a dune buggy. So my dad modified that dune buggy to have hand controls and I started driving that around. My dad's a mechanical engineer for Boeing. So it's funny you talk about like how good it was to be hurt, like, over the summer, you know, the
yeah.
timing of such a terrible thing.
Sure.
A lot of things have been like that. My mom uh-huh. was an ICU nurse where I got hurt
at
the hospital where I spent that, my inpatient.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad's a mechanical engineer. It's a terrible thing to happen, but I don't think I could be in a better situation. I mean, my mom can handle anything medical. My dad has made me everything I ever need to
That's so cool.
manage everything. So.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. And so you've really had this amazing support
yes,
throughout, and
yeah.
you've been able to learn from them too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
And you have siblings?
Yeah, a brother and a sister.
And they've been really supportive.
Everybody's been very supportive, yes.
And you all love the dune buggies?
We all love the dune buggies.
That's awesome. I love
yeah,
that.
My brother rides a dirt bike. Mm-hmm. My sister has recently started driving the old dune buggy that I used to drive.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And they're all local. You're local.
Yeah.
That's
Chino
cool.
Hills.
Okay.
All of us are in Chino Hills.
So it's not like you traveled halfway across the country to go to college and you've been far away from your family. Like you're able to stay close with everybody.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And so tell me about this scholarship.
So the Swim With Mike scholarship,
mm-hmm.
When I started there, it was a USC exclusive
mm-hmm.
deal, but they've since branched out to other universities. They've grown quite a bit. They offer scholarships to athletes who suffer a disabling injury.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Every year they have, now there are multiple, but a swimathon
mm-hmm.
At USC, and I think there's now one in Hawaii and San Diego. There's probably a couple others that I'm missing
it's so
to raise money for it.
That is a swim, like it's obvious, you said for athletes in general, right? But
yes.
It's interesting that it was born out of swimming. Is it a common sport for people to suffer injury in?
Swimming?
Yeah, because I'm thinking like football, of course. Like there are kids who are playing football in high school and they get a concussion or, you know, horrible things happen. I guess you don't think about it happening much with swimming.
So a lot with broken necks, you have car crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Diving is pretty common.
Interesting.
So,
gosh, I never would have thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, car accidents, obviously. Like
yeah.
when I think about brain injury, spinal cord injury, from any of the research that I used to do, car accidents, motorcycle accidents, things
yeah.
like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. you know, things where you should be wearing a helmet,
yeah.
but you don't wear a helmet when you go swimming,
yeah.
obviously. And it's, yeah, you don't think about it. But that's really cool that that there is this opportunity for kids who were probably really pushing and following this passion and probably having every expectation that that's what they were going to go to school on is that scholarship, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot riding on it when you're an athlete. But you also are obviously an intellectual. When you were swimming in high school, were you also a star student or had you not found that in yourself yet?
Oh, no. I've never struggled at school.
Really?
Yeah.
And you have amazing parents who've always
yes.
supported you. So did you know that, did you love physics when you were in high school?
I've always loved math and science.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure where that would take me while I was in high school. I hadn't planned on physics. I actually went into electrical engineering because my dad was an engineer and he said, if you want to do engineering, go electrical, not mechanical. Electrical's where it's at right now.
That's what my dad did too.
So, yeah. So I went into electrical and then switched to
yeah.
physics. So,
and so with Quantum Chess, which is this amazing kind of thought experiment turned into a fun game. Are you excited about the educational opportunities of this, the opportunities that this game has to inspire young people to be more involved in STEM and to want to get involved in physics as they get older?
Absolutely. I think I see the game as a way to not teach quantum mechanics, but to let people's brains sort of develop an intuitive understanding of how quantum phenomena might act. So it's not like you're going to go out and be able to do quantum equations. But that wasn't what I was shooting for. I was shooting for a fun game that, as a side effect, you start to kind of understand things a little better. And I think, I mean, just myself, I understand quantum mechanics better from making it. So
that's so cool. You know, it's funny because we talk about quantum mechanics in a way that's like, it's looking at the universe in a fundamentally not intuitive way.
Yes.
So to have something like a Steve Jobs approach, you know, how do we make it so that it just is natural? As you do it more, it just becomes a part of how you look at things.
Yeah.
It's such a brilliant approach because, as we know, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I've talked to a lot of physicists and you know, I'm not a physicist. I love science. I have been a science reporter for many years, so I can report on phenomena like gravitational wave detection.
Yes.
But I don't know if I understand it anywhere near the way that the people who are doing the science do.
Yeah.
And part of that is because I don't really speak math. There's this language that many physicists speak, especially quantum physicists, a mathematical language that allows them to understand certain phenomena at a deeper level. But because I don't speak math doesn't mean that I can't start to at least perceive the world in a quantum physics kind of a way.
Exactly. And so I've given this example a couple of times, but everybody sort of has an intuitive understanding of gravity.
Sure, yeah.
If you drop something, it's going to fall, you know? But we don't, I mean, even scientists, you don't have that same intuitive feel for quantum phenomena like superposition and entanglement. It's still weird because we haven't been interacting with it our entire lives. I mean, you've been interacting with gravity since before you were born.
Yeah, our brains like didn't really evolve to see things on that scale or see things at that level.
But I feel like if we did interact with quantum stuff for our entire lives, even through games, then our brains would develop in a way that it made a little more sense.
So what made you choose chess as the platform and not, I don't know, checkers?
I like chess. I enjoy it. I feel like it was just sort of a natural fit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's already a pretty intellectual, complex game. And this is obviously adding more complexity to it. So it just seemed like a natural direction to go. Though I do want to do quantum checkers.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. Almost like maybe that would be like a starter game for people who haven't quite mastered chess.
I have ideas for many other types of games that are not chess because chess isn't for everyone. But I would like to make interacting with quantum phenomena accessible to as many people as possible.
Sure. So the one thing that we didn't get to was, because I think it's such a great story, you know, you're working on your degrees, you're plugging along, you're doing your research, but you had this one class, and this one class really helped, I guess, facilitate, maybe helped you follow that spark that made you actually go, I'm going to do this. So tell me about that.
So it was the first class I had taken for fun ever.
Said by a true grad student.
Every class fulfills a requirement.
Uh-huh.
And I've been there a long time. I was starting to feel kind of a little burned out and needed a change. And I happened to run into this professor that was telling me about this class in creativity and invention that he was teaching the following semester. And my now wife, she was my girlfriend at the time, but Lori kind of urged me into taking it. And so I decided to enroll. It was pretty simple class, not a lot of intellectual stuff to it. We drew a lot. We took pictures of stuff. But the professor, the way he described it, It was Professor Koshinovis. Mm-hmm. And he described the course as he was trying to teach a lifestyle that would foster creativity. So we would take pictures of anything. I mean, water droplets running down a wall. But then we would try and find significance beyond what we could see in that. How did that affect or give you insight into other areas of life or the world? You know, mm-hmm. we'd draw a lot of pictures, and he said it doesn't matter how good they are, just as long as you put it, as much effort into it as you can. So he graded us on our effort. We would invent little things, like one of our assignments was create three things using pink erasers, toothpicks, and rubber bands.
Oh, fun.
And so we'd all show up with three little inventions that, yeah. But then we had a final project. And he suggested, given my background, I try and create something that might help people understand quantum mechanics a little mm-hmm. better. And so that's when I made my little game that was a 5x5 board with pieces that moved around quantum mechanically. And it was interesting. It was quantum.
Oh, so you first started it as like an analog game, like a physical...
No. It was an app.
Oh, it was on my tablet. You developed an app?
It was on my tablet,
yeah. Develop an app. Like, that's impressive. You went from using pink erasers, toothpicks, and rubber bands to developing a quantum chess app.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And so at first it was maybe probably quite simple.
Oh, it was super simple. It mm-hmm. was... pieces of, I mean, it was two players on a 5x5 board, and all the pieces were the same. Each player started with five pieces, and you moved one space at a time quantumly. So there was no difference. There you couldn't choose to move like classically, like you do in quantum chess, mm. or quantumly. It was all, okay, I'm going to maybe move one space forward. Now I'm going to maybe move one space forward and right.
Yeah.
And... I was proud of it. I mean, it wasn't fun. That was one of my design goals, is this game has to actually be fun in order to affect people. You know, yeah. I mean, nobody's going to play it, and then it's going to have no impact.
And so that first iteration you didn't feel like was fun?
It wasn't fun, but it was quantum.
Yeah.
And it was a board game, and it was interesting. And so I showed it to my research advisor, and he said, hey, I know this guy over at Caltech who might be interested in seeing this, and his name is Spiros Michalkas. He's kind of interested in this sort of thing. Spiros did the QCraft mod for Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I have to say, just to interrupt, I'm really impressed that you can say his last name, because none of us can. Everybody's like, Spiros M, everybody.
Yeah. he's an awesome guy.
He's very, yeah, he's very, very cool. And he touts, I mean, the praises of quantum chess all the time. He's so excited by this. He thinks it can do so much good. I mean, the same way that the mod for Minecraft can. You know, it's like you get people where they are, you entertain them, and you make it somewhat more intuitive. And it really does have lasting effects on people that are much, I think, greater and further beyond any of your original intentions. And so what was that partnership like? How long have you been working with Spiros?
About almost 2 years now, yeah.
Very cool. And how did it feel, or how, I should say, did it come about when Spiros first said to you, I'm assuming he came to you and said, okay, I have this great idea. We'll have Stephen Hawking play your game.
It was pretty interesting. So I had been working on the game for like a year and a half, and uh-huh. it had finally turned into quantum chess. And I was like, you know what? This is really cool. And Spiros agreed. And he said, so we're going to be doing this event. Let's make a video showing off the gameplay. I mean, as part of the entertainment for the event, to show off that, hey, you can have actual quantum phenomena in a game. I mean, unlike the other previous games where it was sort of showing off what superposition was like, but not really quantum at its core. You're not really interacting with a quantum system.
Sure. You're seeing like one example of one aspect.
Yeah. So he said, yeah, we'll make a video. And so we started kind of talking about what the video would be. And and we decided, well, yeah, it'll be a match between two people. Who those two people are, we don't know. And so at first we thought it would be just a little 2-minute video that was a match between two people, and we didn't know who it would be yet.
Yeah.
We kind of discussed the possibility of maybe Stephen Hawking, And Spiros has some connections, so he was thinking maybe we could get like Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory or something. And so he started reaching out, and Stephen Hawking came back through John Preskill and said, yeah, I'll do that. And
oh, so first of all, before you even had an opponent, did you lose your mind when you heard Stephen Hawking was going to play your game?
Yeah, that was pretty exciting.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I really didn't care who else was going to be in the video yeah. at that point. It was like, yeah, Stephen Hawking's going to be associated with the thing I made. Pretty
so
awesome.
So cool. And then, of course...
So Spiros started kind of reaching some feelers out to see who else would be involved in this video. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, he and I and a couple of other people are sort of working on a tentative script of how the game would go. And then November hits, and he goes, so I have some bad news. Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory is not going to be doing your game. But Paul Rudd is. And I was like, okay.
And of course, Paul Rudd was in Ant-Man.
Yes, and Spiros was a science advisor for Ant-Man. And
yeah,
so
he goes into the quantum realm.
Obviously, Spiros knows Paul Rudd. I mean, right? That's just... a given.
And how amazing. Oh, and that's not even the end of it. I totally yeah. forgot. Continue.
So then we're like, okay, well, now we have the makings of a pretty cool video. And so we're working on the script, and it becomes obvious that we need someone to narrate mm-hmm. it. And so we started talking about possible narrators. And the next week I met with Spiros, and he goes, so we're maybe going to be able to get Keanu Reeves to narrate. And I was just kind of, I think my reaction, all I said was, cool. Because I really didn't know how to react.
You're like, I already have Hawking. All right.
And literally, as I was sitting there talking to him about this, he got a text and he goes, Keanu's in.
Oh, that's so funny.
So now it's a battle for the future of humanity between Paul Rudd and Stephen Hawking, narrated by Keanu Reeves. Oh, and Alex Winter is directing it. And this was like November.
And if you go to YouTube right now, you can just look up Anyone Can Quantum. It's on IQIM Caltech's YouTube channel, so you'll see. You'll know you're in the right place. And you'll also know you're in the right place because it has 1.7 million views.
Yeah, it exploded.
Oh my gosh, so cool. And I love all of the comments. They're so funny underneath it. I'll tell you what, when I was there, did you get to go to the event?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we were both there. We just hadn't met. Beautiful event. I think that Crystal did such an amazing job directing it. I think that all of the people involved were so brilliant. Jorge Cham animated all of the PowerPoints. Our friend Gia Mora did a duet with John
Preskill.
That
song and dance was pretty awesome.
Amazing. But I'll tell you what, Anyone Can Quantum brought down the house.
Yeah,
it was... like people lost their minds. They were laughing so hard.
It turned into something pretty amazing.
It really did. And I think it's so cool to have that kind of support really pushing and making sure that quantum chess really... it really comes to fruition. So if I look at your Kickstarter right now, I am quantum chess. I'm Googling, guys. Hold, please, Googling. Okay, so you opened this up how long ago?
It was February 2nd.
All right, so we've got 10 days to go on the Kickstarter. As of this recording, which is Sunday, February 21st, we'll be airing tomorrow, so it'll be 9 days. Over $27,000, but you have a $30,000 goal. So this won't even happen until you hit that goal.
Right.
Which is going to happen. I'm just going to stay. It's going to happen. It's only like a little over $2,000 away. But to make sure that it happens, guys, if you're interested in quantum chess, you should definitely go there. Go to Kickstarter. Look up quantum chess. Hashtag quantum chess by Chris Cantwell. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Cantwell. Good.
You can also go to... www.pledgequantumchess.com.
Nice. And so that'll, you can support you that there. Way too. Okay, great, great. So yeah, check it out, guys. The Anyone Can Quantum video is embedded in there. There are some other really great videos here so that you can learn more about it and read everything about it. You can even see the gameplay. You can see what the screen caps look like and see all of the cool all of the cool, what do you call them? Rewards for the pledges. Yes, yeah. You could be Einstein or Bohr or Feynman. Oh, I love this. That's so great. Queen, King, Schrodinger's King. So yeah, check it out, guys. I know that you will absolutely love it. And Chris, I know that you have a lot of stuff you have going on this evening, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. But when I close my podcast, I always ask everybody the same two questions. Okay. And I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you as well, because I'd love to hear your perspective. So the first question is kind of the depressing one, so I always lead with that. And that one is, when you look to the future, in whatever context matters to you, whether it's personal or global or anything in between, what is the thing that you're most concerned about, the thing that keeps you up the most at night, you know, that really truly worries you? And on the flip side of that, the next question is, what are you excited about and what are you optimistic about when you look to the future?
Oh, what am I concerned about? Mm-hmm.
What's that thing?
Finishing the PhD.
I said it once, I'll say it again. Spoken like a true grad student.
Yes. The question every grad student dreads is, oh, how long until you're finished? Yeah. It takes as long as it takes.
Yeah, and it's so much work.
Yeah.
But you've been chugging along. I know that you'll get there.
I'll get there eventually.
And when you do, it'll be like just so rewarding, yeah, because of all of the extra steps you had to take. So when you look to the future, on the flip side of that, what are you most hopeful for? Like what do you really look forward to?
Right now, this game.
Yeah.
I think getting this game out into the world, and if it's successful, making it better, making other games, and making a company that makes stuff like this to help people understand quantum phenomena better. I think that'd be a pretty good direction.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. And I got to ask before we go, where can people find you personally? Are you like on social media? Do you have a Twitter or Facebook that people can reach out to on?
I have started a Twitter.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't on Twitter before this, but I am on Twitter now.
Nice.
Schrodinger King. I couldn't get Schrodinger's King. The S was too long. So.
But that's perfect. So yeah. At Schrodinger King,
yeah.
You guys can say hi to Chris. And one more time, where can they go to find the game?
PledgeQuantumChess.com.
That's an easy one. PledgeQuantumChess.com. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. I had a blast.
Thank you. I had a good time too. I love talking about this thing.
So fun. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Week after week, I'm really looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.